You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the bonds shared between people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to this episode of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining us this week is a very special guest, the one and only Alyssa Miller. Welcome to the show.
Heck of an intro.
I want to know if we have fact-checked that. Is there only one? I know there's only one of you.
I know for a fact there is more than one because you live across the street from me.
What?
Oh, really?
Across the street from you?
I mean, she's not an InfoSec. Don't get me wrong.
But okay. Well, you're the one and only in InfoSec, so.
All right. That might be true.
How about we just go with the best, Alyssa Miller?
I like that.
I can't comment on that.
That's good.
I can.
That's good.
I recused myself from that conversation.
We're full of recusals this week.
So I have to ask this question. Do you have any crazy stories about Kevin Johnson?
Oh, of course not.
She's never seen me on a mechanical bull.
On a mechanical bull.
She has never social engineered me at an OS conference.
And,
I saw tweets about that.
Those were lies.
Oh, were they? Okay.
I might have been the one tweeting.
What were the lies you told, Kevin?
Yeah, that would have been, because I'm the one who said it. I remember in San Diego.
Washington, D.C.
No, I was talking about the mechanical bull.
Oh, the mechanical bull. Was that in the... No, that was Reno.
Reno, you're right. It wasn't...
Yes. Wild West Hackenfest, way west.
Ah, yes.
And that was still a thing.
Okay.
Which was also a little confusing because it's already in the west in
South Dakota.
Yeah. The west end of South Dakota.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey.
It's pretty much the only reason to go to South Dakota.
I mean, some might argue that.
Those people would be wrong.
So did Kevin stay on the bull or no?
I was on the bull for a short period of time.
For a second?
Yeah.
Okay.
A few seconds. Somewhere I have the video.
Yes.
Okay.
Did I not post that video? I should have.
What's the social engineering story?
Oh,
that one greatly interests me.
Kevin needs to tell this because from Kevin's perspective is what makes it perfect.
I don't know if anything from Kevin's perspective is perfect. So last year, I was elected to the board for OWASP. And when they notified us that we were elected, it was at AppSec DC, the big event. And they told us, please don't tell anybody until the closing ceremony tomorrow where we'll announce it to the world. And the reason for it is four people were elected. And when you were elected, you had an option to say, my situation has changed. I can't do this. I can't, you know, like whatever. And what they didn't want to have happen is, let's say that they had elected somebody and that person had said no. And they went to the next person who... the next number of votes, whatever that word is, and that was me, then if that person had announced, hey, I got elected, but I turned it down, or if somebody else said, hey, here's the four people who were elected, and then that one of those four turned it down, then it would make me look like
it'd be generally bad. Yeah, right. I mean, that's fair.
Right. So. And I will say for the record, because I realize it makes it sound this way, the four people they told me were elected all accepted.
So the important thing here is Kevin knows he won.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all, because I still don't know why the people...
No. I'm not saying why you won, but you knew you won.
I knew I won.
You knew you were picked, but nobody in the general pop knew.
Okay.
And was not supposed to know.
Right.
Mm.
So first thing in the morning, I get a signal message, because we use the right communication path, from Alyssa that just says, congratulations. And I wrote back, thanks, I really appreciate it. And then I walked downstairs. And when I got downstairs, I saw Alyssa. And I said to her, hey, by the way, who told you I won? And very, I think the word snarkily is the right word. She said, you. My understanding, and Alyssa, tell me if I'm wrong. My understanding is you had asked like Grant, the chair of the previous board.
I had asked around. I tried to find out and nobody would tell me anything.
Except
I woke up that morning, I'm like, let's find out.
Here's my opinion, and I'm not sure whether this should be a compliment to Alyssa or an anti-compliment to me, but one of the two or both, is I felt that if anybody had the know, right, it would be Alyssa. So when she said congratulations, of course she knew. Why would I?
You use whatever advantage you can when you're formulating a pretext, right? I mean, that's just the way it works.
Yes. So I have been, okay. And I want to be very clear. I am not in any way claiming I have not been social engineered other ways. I'm sure that I have.
I just love the idea that Kevin is now fair game for social engineering. I think I might try it.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
This is not
what I said.
Yeah.
That is not what I said, nor is it what I meant to imply. Yeah. Damn it. So yeah, social engineered me and found out that I had won.
I love that.
Yeah. I want to be clear. Not massively sensitive information.
Well, and not true. And not like months or anything before it was announced. I mean, it was announced later in the day, so it's like, not like
8 hours in advance. But I will say,
quiet. I did not tell anyone else.
Right. I was impressed with how casually she said you. I think that's what made it hurt all the much more.
I love it.
That is awesome.
Yeah, but you know, as somebody who can fly a plane, you have to give them information.
Yeah,
right. Like that's an accomplishment that deserves more information.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's the first thing I wanted to talk to you about is aviation. I have been an aviation nerd, maybe a closeted aviation nerd, my whole life. I'm not a pilot. I don't claim to be a pilot or anything, but I love
valor.
No, none of that. I was in the military, but did not fly planes, just to be clear. But I love your Hacker Aviation content on YouTube. I've watched like a ton of your videos, and I just want to hear just a little bit about your aviation story, because it's just so inspiring to me. I feel like you had your pilot's license, then you bought a plane. Then I feel like the next step for you is maybe owning an airport or something. I don't know, but...
We're gonna go somewhere. Oh God, you don't even know.
See, I'm close on that.
Shit. So I was not in the military, and I do fly planes. So here's the story. I grew up in Milwaukee, about a mile away from a municipal airport where they did flight training. So every day in the summer, you know, like they're flying over my house. And they were, you know, you'd be driving down Appleton Avenue or 91st Street or Hampton Avenue in Milwaukee. Yes, I'm putting some OSINT out there, but you guys can find it anyway. And these planes are flying, you know, they're landing. But the way, it's in the middle of the city. So it's like, you know, road, fence, runway, all within the course of about 20 feet. So, you know, these planes are like, you know, maybe 30 feet over your head when they're landing. But it was just like, so as a kid, I was like, this is the coolest thing. But I don't come from money, and there was no way like that was, you know, it didn't seem like it was anything. It was even possible, right? Like, there's no way I could ever be a pilot. I got into my 20s. Now I'm working in tech. I'm making good money. I find out how, like, actually attainable it is to become just a private pilot. But I'm married. I got 3 kids. So all that good money that I'm making is going elsewhere. It's just, you know, and time and all the other things, right? It's still not going to happen. So fast forward to 2022 and actually the end of 2021, and I'm working a really good job. I make lots of money. I'm not going to lie about that. And, you know, I'm divorced. I've got my 3 kids are out of the house, and I'm kind of looking at my financial situation like, if I'm going to do this, it's kind of now or never. So I've always wanted to. I never did. Screw it. And so I bought an online ground school app, started doing that, called around to the local flight schools. There's one at the airport that's less than a couple miles from my house, and, you know, started training. Now, what's funny is my intention, and this is what makes people laugh, because my nickname has always been 0 to 60, because anytime I get into anything, it's always just I'm headlong into it, right? So I'm getting into this, and I'm like, well, you know, I just want to get my pilot's license to say I have it. Maybe I'll fly rentals from time to time, or, you know, if I really want to, I could join a flight club. Well, so I get to the airport, and you see what they have for rentals, because they're also the trainers, and you're like, okay, they've seen, you know, a lot of use. They're not unsafe or anything, but they're just, you know, I mean, if you're going to go take someone flying, that probably not the plane you would be your first choice, I guess. And there's closest flight clubs like an hour and a half away in Madison. So, all right, this, you know, this isn't going to work as well as I had hoped. And so as I was training, I started looking at the cost of planes and what it would take. And I'm like, oh, crap. I might actually be able to afford this. And then I got a new job that paid even more than what I was already making. So then it was like, all right, yes, I'm all in. So right after I started soloing. So as you're training, you know, you're flying with a flight instructor, but you get to a point where now you start flying solo. You're not a licensed certificated pilot. So there's all sorts of restrictions on you yet. But right about that time is when I bought the airplane. And so I've been flying it ever since. I've got damn near 500 hours now.
Wow.
Since November. Well, since April of 2022 when I started. I got my certificate in November of 2022. But back to the airport thing. Funny story.
Uh-huh.
Me and a couple friends met at this little airport. If you've seen the video, the airport that time forgot, which is on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've had more than a few conversations with folks because it's owned by this woman who really has no interest in owning an airport, right? Like, the only reason the airport's upkept anymore is because the people who still have airplanes there work very hard to keep it up and take a lot of pride in it and whatever. But it's this neat little airport. And off the one end of the runway is a restaurant. So, like, you can literally land, park on the grass on the side of the end of the runway and walk 200 feet to the restaurant.
That's cool.
Right. So I just did that a couple of weeks ago with a friend. But I'm like, this is a cool airport. I don't want to see it go away. She wants to sell it to developers. Because obviously, you know,
it would go away at that point.
Yeah. Definitely. It would become something else. So I have actually been loosely talking with some folks about an idea of how we could maybe, you know, come in and buy this airport and how that would look and how that would be run. And, you know, there's a lot of challenges I don't happen. But I just want to preserve it because there's airports closing all over the place. And you want to keep some of these things around. They're so neat.
You know what you could do? Is there enough property to build a conference center and we could have Airport Con?
Whoa.
And you could fly in hackers from all over the place to present.
So there's a little road that's by the end of the other end of that same runway I was just talking about. And just across from that is a ton of farmland. Like, if they're ever looking to sell.
Yeah. And you know,
the hacker compound.
Depending on where the area is, and I won't say that I know this because I'm looking at it for something I'm working on, but I'm looking at it for something I'm working on. If the area it is in is zoned 8A by the federal government, there are a ton of relatively easy grants to get if you can show that you're offering education to an underserved area because of 8A. You and I might want to talk afterwards because we're looking at this for a different idea.
The ideas are rolling right now. Okay.
Yeah. So
that's the aviation story.
You may be able to make that dream work.
that would be so crazy. I mean, it would be, you know, it's not anything you do to be making like a profit for sure.
No.
You know, running a small municipal airport is not a profit making.
You're general. Saying that there are hugely profitable things going on at small mini airports around the country.
No. In fact, if they weren't owned by cities and they didn't have, you know, covenants with the FAA.
Yeah.
Which that's actually part of the problem with this one is I don't think it'd be eligible for any FAA grants. That's actually the best way to get an airport to stick around, by the way, is to have the airport get a government grant for the airport from the FAA. Now you have to sign this like massive, I think it's 50 years. Long covenant.
I think
that airport will remain public use. And they're fighting this battle right now in Colorado because there's a town in Colorado wants to close theirs. And the FAA is like, well, if you do that, we're going to come sue you.
And rightfully so, because you signed something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's the usual story. It's neighbors who moved in, you know, 60 years after the airport was ever built and now are complaining the airport's too loud.
Because, you know, when you buy a house, you don't notice the airport next door.
Oh, we've had people at my airport claim that. complained and claimed that when they bought the house, they didn't know the airport was there.
What was the one with the Mythbusters where they were next to a bombing range and the Mythbusters shot a cannonball through a house by accident?
Yes.
And yeah, the family complained, and it was like, but you, I mean, I feel horrible that it happened. You know, like, you know,
and
what
I'm
mean?
Sort of like, for that matter. Like, if you watch, like, Adam Savage talk about that now, like, that was impactful for them, too. And they definitely changed their safety protocols after that.
Absolutely.
Then.
But I also want to argue, you built the house next to a bomb range.
You weren't expecting projectiles to fly through the air?
I wonder if it'll be loud.
I wonder if you might feel that from time to time.
Oh my God. Sorry.
So just to finish up on the aviation topic, what's been the biggest challenge for you becoming a pilot?
Ooh. That's a toss-up between mechanicals and weather. Honestly, those are the biggest things, because weather is a challenge, and I'm dealing with that right now. I have actually my instrument check ride is scheduled for this coming week, and forecast is rain every day. So that might not happen just yet. But yeah, it was like leading up to my private pilot check ride, I had mechanical issues. When I was getting ready to start instrument training, I had some mechanical issues over the course of that delayed it. In fact, one of those is captured again in a video on that same channel. Me having it, and I'm now giving a conference talk based off of that emergency landing. And that'll be, and to be clear, when I say mechanical issues, most of these are things that, like, you know, it's not a flight safety issue. It's not something that occurred.
Not a door flying off a 737 or anything.
That happens.
That's a little more terrifying. The only door on my plane is still attached, and that's where it belongs.
It's not made by Boeing, so yeah.
No, but I'm right. I did have the one, which was an emergency landing. And even that, in that case, it wasn't, as it turns out, wasn't as emergent as it seemed in the moment. I mean, and that's what matters. I mean, something goes wrong in the air, you get to the ground as fast as you can, hopefully under your own control.
I was going to say, you have a choice. You get to the ground as fast as you can, or you will get to the ground as fast as you can.
My flight instructor always said, taking off is optional, landing is not. So
I like that.
Wow.
Right? That's actually why I don't want to learn how to fly. I've always wanted to be a pilot. I've always wanted to fly planes. But I also know how often that I drive from work to home. And when I get home, I don't remember that drive at all because I spaced out and thought about other things. And I feel like doing that on a road is bad, but not horrible. But doing that...
Doing that in an airplane could be
an airplane. I feel like
that would be a bad...
Yeah.
That could be a very bad day.
Yeah.
At least a terrifying one.
For somebody.
The plane, the house you buzzed at 2,000 feet, or at 200 feet, rather. That might be a bad day for them, too.
I mean, we've kind of been on the InfoSec topic. I mean, now we might have a conference at an airport one day. Who knows, right?
Hangar, we could do it.
That'd be amazing.
By the way, your hangar looks awesome.
That. Thank you.
Yeah, that was...
But now
really
you've
cool
got me
looking.
Thinking, I love it. I do an InfoSec conference in my hangar.
Yes.
See?
Yes, you can.
Now I have to talk to our airport manager and see.
Yeah. Okay, that might prevent you. That I don't know.
That would be the bigger thing. Let's see how they feel about that. Like, I can do a party in there, but like a big conference of a bunch of InfoSec people, that might be a bridge too far. We'll see.
I feel like you don't want to tell them that it's hackers. Yeah. IT people. It'll be fine.
Are you tired of compromising on security when it comes to managed file transfer? Look no further. Meet Kiteworks, the most secure MFT on the market today. Kiteworks MFT suite is not just secure, it's FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. This means it undergoes yearly audits and continuous monitoring by certified third-party assessors. But that's not all. Kiteworks provides a world-class secure file sharing and email platform. Easy for end users, manageable for administrators. With custom integrations, unified console management, Kiteworks sets the bar high where traditional MFT servers fall short. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started today. That's kiteworks.com to get started today.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
So the big InfoSec related question I want to ask you is, we're already kind of through the first quarter here of 2024, and still got a lot left of the year, unfortunately. But what is the biggest challenge that you're seeing right now in the industry, especially from your purview being a CISO and, you know, you've been in the industry for so long? Just really curious to know, like, what is the thing that we really need to overcome the rest of this year?
Well, I mean, clearly there's two of them. They're generative AI and quantum computing, because that's what I can't stop hearing about.
Yeah. Every vendor in the world, right? Yeah.
I was just waiting. Kevin couldn't keep that straight. He's going.
No.
Oh, so those are not the issue. Okay.
I'm mostly worried about post-quantum.
Oh, we totally know.
I mean, they are an issue. AI. Don't get me in quantum AI. Oh, God.
So there.
Heaven. Holy cow. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. They are legitimate challenges that we have to be worried about. But when we're seeing, you know, a certain government agency who's telling everybody, just patch your shit, and then their shit's not patched.
Or what
maybe
about...
Maybe we have a few bigger worries than what happens in AI. Yeah.
What right? about only use memory-safe languages because they're safe?
Oh, God. Heaven. Oh,
wow, Kevin. Sorry.
You can tell he was a C programmer at some time.
Of course I was a C programmer. I'm old.
Yay, B.
I wasn't at our age. Yeah.
Now, like, for Scott the win.
Yeah. Pearl.
Oh, jeez. But no, I mean, I think, you know, what most of it's evergreen, right? It is that we have, like, this constantly evolving landscape that hasn't changed. I mean, I literally had a board member ask me, so when can we slow down our investment in cybersecurity? And I spun it around. I'm like, well, as soon as you slow down your investment in new technology, are you going to do that? Yeah. No, because that would be business suicide. So, yeah, and that's the thing. So, I mean, when I look at challenges going into this year, I think, you know, one that's impacting a lot of CISOs right now is the fact that, honestly, the solutions in cybersecurity have largely abandoned the idea that on-prem data centers exist anymore. The last number I saw said something like 60% of IT infrastructure is still in on-prem data centers. I work in an industry, in an organization where, because of the nature of what we do, where we hold literal hundreds of petabytes of data, we're not going to the cloud anytime soon. Can you imagine putting all of that storage in the cloud? I mean, you know, that's the thing. So I think that's actually starting to become more and more of an issue is, everybody was so hyper-focused on cloud transformation and all this, you know, we're going to go cloud native everything, that every solution that comes out to fix every problem lately, they're all focused on cloud. I can't tell you, even in the IAM space, how many providers I've talked to who are like, oh yeah, we won't integrate with on-prem Active Directory, only Azure AD. Yeah. Oh, really? So nobody's using on-prem domain controllers anymore? No one? You know, and it's like, and I've had this conversation with a few startups, you know, and the same thing there. And a lot of it is because of the same thing that makes cloud attractive for businesses, right? the ease of deployment, the flexibility, you know, the go fast kind of thing. It's the same when you're building a new tool, right? Whatever that thing is, that next blinky light thing that you're going to build. Well, they're not really blinky lights anymore. Now they're blinky pixels on a screen somewhere. And because it's all software and it's all going into the cloud. And so what's the easiest route? Well, we just support cloud. We don't, you know, if we try to do on-prem, well, then we have to write, you know, on-prem software and we have to worry about, you know, things potentially down to the level of, you know, device drivers and all the hard stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges. And it's not just startups. So don't get me wrong. I mean, this is clear up to Microsoft. And I'll call them out because I'm in a bad mood with them today. You know, it's everyone. It's every one of them. So I can say that name, but I could easily throw out, you know, 100 other big names who are showing the same motion, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that for me as a CISO is a big challenge. You know, I mean, I think we are on the cusp as well of a staffing situation. So we've been screaming, you know, oh my God, the talent gap and all this, which anyone who's talked to me knows I don't buy into that for a second. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I wrote a whole book about, or based on the fact that I didn't agree with it. But where I think we're going to start to see it is we've kind of seen that whole labor market really, it's always a pendulum, right? It always swings. Yeah. Who's kind of got the upper hand? Is it the labor? Is it the market or the organizations? And we've swung so far to the labor side of it now, which is a good thing in my opinion. I'm just worried we're going to see it start swinging back. And I think we already did. Like, I think we've seen some efforts because, you know, there's, you know, you look at some of the layoffs and things. I look at some of those that occurred towards the end of last year. And it's like, you look at their financials and you're like, wait a minute, why were you cutting heads? Mm-hmm. You really weren't in a position you needed to. And I don't buy we're maximizing shareholder value. Yeah, that's always out there. But I do, and this is maybe a little conspiracy theorist of me, but I do believe there is some concerted effort to try to take back and, you know, gain greater control because we've got epically low unemployment. We've got, you know, people pushing wages higher for the first time in a really long time. So, of course, there's going to be resistance to that. And where that hits me as a CISO is, if I ever have the issue that my organization decides to try to do something like that, which I thankfully have not seen from them, you know, that makes now my staffing a challenge because it does not make it easier to find people when that happens, believe it or not. It actually makes it harder because you've got everybody slamming, you know, resumes in for every job that's out there. And, you know, suddenly now trying to find the person who's, you know, that fit that's going to work well in that particular role that you've got gets a lot harder.
Yeah, the pool's too big. There's just too many people applying for the same job.
Well, how many stories have you heard of people who are like, I've sent out my resume to 100 jobs and gotten 100 declines?
All the time.
That's not good for hiring. And that's the part they're missing. They're trying to depress, you know, salary growth, but you're creating a mess that's actually going to cause you more problems.
Yeah. I mean, I've got people right now that I would consider, you know, high performers, like amazing people that any organization would snatch up that are having an extremely hard time. I mean, they're telling me they've never had this in their career because they're high performers. And that was the thing, right? If you're a high performer, there's always a job for you somewhere, but that's not necessarily the case anymore.
It's not. And all this talk of talent gap and you know, whatever, trying to slam as many people through cybersecurity programs as we could, you know, it has created a very big pool. And since we aren't real good at hiring in cybersecurity anyway, you know, it's created a lot of problems.
You've done a lot in your career, and I'm not going to recap all of your career highlights. You can if you'd like, but what's been the biggest failure for you from a career perspective? And what did you learn from that experience?
I don't know that anyone has ever asked me that question. And I freaking love that question.
All right. Thomas,
but now it's like I got to actually try to think of what the
answer is. Think about it. Yeah. Good.
Like, I mean, there's been a few, I guess. God, biggest failure. I mean, obviously, I've gotten to where I am now. So, you know, I've it all worked out. So that's part of it too. It's hard to think of what is really a failure versus a learning opportunity. They all are. You know, I think I did get into a situation with a former employer who I would say did me a little dirty. And I think, you know, from my perspective, I didn't see what was going on until it was way too late. I could have tackled that problem a lot differently. And so we are talking about what I consider to be a discriminatory situation, just to put it all out there. I'm not going to name the organization, but, you know, and it was one of those things where I went into it way too naive. I was, you know, just believed everybody was inherently good and that those types of things, you know, they happen to someone else, not me kind of thing. And then when it happens to you, you're like, oh, this is what everybody else has been talking about. And then you find out, you know, things like, you know, hear people talk about, well, HR is never on your side. You know, their job is to get, you know, to make sure the company doesn't get sued. And I know my HR people at work would argue against me on this, but that's the reality. And it's played out firsthand with me, where it's actually easier to deal with the person who's making the accusation or reporting the behavior than it is to deal with the person who's got the behavior problem, because if you acknowledge that, suddenly that opens up a lot of liability, right? And that's, you know, and that's effectively the scenario I was caught in. So I think, you know, the lesson I learned from that is, one, to recognize that sooner and to know, you know, to see some of the signs that I should have seen that were there that I didn't latch on to, you know, be aware that it can happen. And then the one thing I did do that I think I was happy about was getting the heck out. But, you know, I wish I had understood sooner that that was really my only option, which is it sounds like a really horribly dark thing to say. But, you know, you have things like these ethics programs and your HR team and, you know, everything else. And it's epically difficult to get them to actually want to, you know, support the individual. They're there to make sure that the company is doing what it needs to do to reduce risk. And at that point that you report someone else, this can go one of two ways. They could be the risk then, and the company recognizes that and tackles it, or you get identified as the risk, and then you're the one who's going to ultimately either voluntarily or they'll manage you out, right? And so I hate to put that out there because that's such a downer after like we've had all this fun conversation, but that if there was one failure, it was definitely that.
Yeah, I think that's important though. Like, I mean, just thinking about how maybe your experience could help somebody else, right? You know, navigate that. And, you know, I was having a conversation the other day about somebody that, you know, wants to leave their job because it's become so toxic for them and so draining, and HR really isn't giving them much support. And I just said, like, well, why are you still there? Like, you just need to leave. And to your point about HR, is it really worth sticking around? Are you going to get the help you need? Probably not.
And it's hit or miss. Like I said, I mean, I to be fair, again, I don't want to put HR people in a bad light. Ultimately, I've worked with many amazing folks who I know for a fact would not tolerate what happened in my case. But you do have to recognize that that is a possibility, and it's a very real one. And it's not just the thing of movies. It can actually happen. That, you know, they know there's an ongoing issue with said person, but it's easier to pretend like that's not the case and there's nothing wrong here and get you to quiet down than to acknowledge that, because now everybody else who's had complaints with that person, you know, not everybody's paying attention.
I think it's important to call out one of the things that you said that really struck me was you said you knew people would have things happen. You believed them, but not me. It would never happen to me. And I think that that is such a massive aspect of so many people's viewpoint on things, right? You know, oh man, yeah, okay. Alyssa says that happened to her and that's awful. And I hate that it happened to her, but I would never have that happen. It's, you know, things like that. And I find so often that people will downplay what they're experiencing because of that attitude, right?
Well, and the other part of it is that plays into that. Yes, I agree with you, first off, 100%. Yeah. But the other part that plays into that is how subtle the things can be, or there's always, you know, and this is the thing to remember with a lot of this, because it is super, super nefarious how they do these things.
Yeah.
It, you know, there's always that other plausible explanation, right? And we live in this country where, you know, innocent until proven guilty, beyond a reasonable doubt. So if there's another plausible explanation, they're always going to point at that other plausible explanation, which, yeah. I mean, I'm a firm believer in trying to assume positive intent. But when it's something like that, sometimes your spidey sense is just right. Yeah. If you sense that that's what's going on and all the earmarks are there, you personally, for your own sake, need to not assume innocent until proven guilty and instead maybe say, you know what? There's a preponderance of evidence, to keep you with the legal term.
Yes.
That says this is what just happened to me.
Yeah.
Well, do you have anything coming up? Anything you want to plug? Conference talks, anything fun?
Since we talked aviation and InfoSec, even though I realized my failure wasn't like an InfoSec failure directly, two things. I've got two talks coming up. Both speak to the kind of intersection of aviation and InfoSec. I will be speaking at CypherCon. I believe it's August 8th or April 8th. I mean,
same month.
one of those days. I did that earlier too. I told somebody that today was May 22nd. It's clearly not.
I had to look.
Gosh.
So yes, April 8th, I believe it is, at CypherCon in Milwaukee. I'll be speaking on what that emergency landing taught me about incident response. So there's some really interesting corollaries there. And then April 20th, I'm going to be in Kansas City at B-Sides Kansas City. And we're going to be talking about taking the human element to the MAX series of aircraft.
Uh-huh.
And talking about the mistakes there, but then again, how those correlate to many of the same mistakes we make in the cybersecurity space.
I love it.
Both not taking into account the human element or misunderstanding how we should be taking into account the human element. And when you look at how the MAX 8 series, all these things, it's uncanny where you see these parallels.
I love it.
So it's not a talk to bash Boeing. Because believe me, if I really wanted to, even though no one's talking about them right now, I can bash Airbus just as badly.
Yes.
Man.
Nice.
Cool.
And where can our listeners find out more about you and all the things you got going on?
The internet. Oh,
just the internet.
If I can help.
If you can't Google her, you're not trying hard.
You can't find me.
That's
honestly,
true.
The amount of hosting about me out there is astonishing. My OPSEC is awful. But no, seriously, at @AlyssaM_InfoSec on most major platforms. If it's that blue square thing that Microsoft bought, then it's a dash instead of an underscore because they put it in the URL and the underscores don't work in the URL. So, but yes, AlyssaM_InfoSec. You'll find me Blue Sky, Mastodon, Twitter.
Thank you.
I'm glad someone said it.
They are tweets.
The right way. That's right.
They are tweets.
Good.
Oh, God.
Awesome. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm glad we were finally able to do this. And
I love
the Kevin stories. This is great.
Oh, I got
more Kevin stories, the better. I'm sure you have more. But we'll let that be on again, and we could just have a Kevin roasting.
I don't think we need a Kevin
podcast
roast
or something.
I don't think we need a Kevin roast.
I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface.
I know. There's so many.
Let's be clear.
My first memory of Kevin is a great one. So, you know.
Wait, now I want to know what your favorite memory of Kevin is.
Oh, maybe we end with
training,
that.
I'm going to marry W3AF.
What?
Kevin said he was going to marry.
I may have said in a class that I would marry Andres Riancho because W3AF was so good.
I'm pretty sure you said you were going to marry the tool.
I might have.
Not the developer of the tool?
Not the developer. He was going to marry W3AF.
I mean,
yeah. So.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I would never
say
something.
Now we call
like
it Web3 as but can I say that?
You can say it.
I say things like that all the time. It just means Tom has more effort to bleep things.
Yeah.
I dropped some S-bombs before. I didn't know if the F-bomb
was fine. We're totally fine. No problem. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. for being on the show, and we'll hopefully see you soon.
All right, sounds great. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X at sharedsec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.